Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, of course, you can always hit us up in the chat room. And we can take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Raw last night, folks, was really a mixed bag. I've talked to some people who loved it, and I talked to some people who hated it. And truthfully, I fall somewhere in the middle. There are parts of this show that I thought had real potential, and there were parts of this show that I think could lead to something good in the future. And then there were parts of this show that I literally was left scratching my head saying, what's going on? And the inconsistency, I think, is what's destroying Monday Night Raw. Monday Night Raw, even when they have good things, follows up with bad things. Enough so, unfortunately, you're watching this saying, this is going to be good. I'm enjoying this. And then they hit you with three things in a row that you're like, oh, God, what are you doing to me? And it kind of drains the fun out of the stuff that was good. So let's get right to it because there's a lot to talk about. And this show starts out with Braun Strowman, Dolph Ziggler, and Drew McIntyre hitting the ring in full heel mode. Full out heel mode. Now, we had speculated that maybe Braun Strowman wasn't actually turning heel because, after all, Roman Reigns did have his buddies back jump him when all he was trying to do was cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase, which is his right to do, and do it very upfront. Told the winner of the match, I'm there to cash in my Money in the Bank briefcase. So he committed no egregious, horrible act. He simply tried to cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase and was gang jumped by the Shield. That's just a fact. So that's not really a great way to turn a guy heel. But last night, he's in full heel mode. And what really bothers me the most is, this is the same Braun Strowman who beat the entire tag team division of the WWE by himself. By himself. And then picked a 10-year-old child out of an audience at WrestleMania and won the tag team title by himself against the Bar. But because the Shield has reformed, he needs backup. He can't handle it. So everything we have come to know about Braun Strowman and his ability and his superhuman strength and his whatever, that's thrown out the window now. Braun Strowman needs help to deal with the Shield. Now, I know why they're doing this. They're doing this to try to minimize why you like Braun Strowman. Well, if Braun Strowman appears to be in need of help, he's not as tough as we thought he was, maybe the fans will stop cheering him. We'll take that away from him, which, you know, you're going to have to do at some point. But you did it too quick, and you did it on, unfortunately, you did it when he is in the right. He deserved to cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase unimpeded. So it's a little bizarre, but Braun Strowman then jumps the shark and says, I don't care what any of you fans think, which he's told to say. You know, get after the fans, Braun. You're a bad guy now. We totally screwed you up as a good guy. So now you're back to being the heel. Okay. Well, you know, there goes the idea that it could possibly be a Wyatt family reunion. That's not happening, eh? So, this brings the Shield down, and we have a melee. Now, the melee is fairly good, except the Shield are somehow arrested. And even if you want to take into consideration that Baron Corbin could have been the man pressing charges and saying they incited a riot or whatever, this is not the first time we've seen a brawl break out on Raw and no one was arrested. So it's a little weird, but okay, the Shield's arrested and that sets the tone for the show. The tone for the show is we have a new faction to combat the Shield, and the Shield were arrested. So let's just start with that concept, Mike. I don't mind Braun Strowman turning heel. I do mind him turning heel when he's in the right, to an extent, about how he was back-jumped when he tried to cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase. And I also have a problem with him suddenly needing other people's help to combat three people when 2 months ago, 20 people wasn't enough to stop him.
You're right. You're right on that. And that's the thing, you know. I mean, I have a problem with this whole melee thing, too, because think about this. For how many years, I mean, we're all fans here, me, you, Todd, when he calls up Sabretooth and others, we're all fans, and we've been following wrestling for a while. For how many years have we seen melees take place like this, and nothing ever happened?
Yeah, see, that's the problem. Suddenly they're arrested, and they're charged with inciting a riot. They're charged with inciting a riot for coming down to confront someone in a wrestling match? That's a little bizarre. See, this is where they lose me, Mike. They jump the shark all the time. It's all well and good to have the Shield punished somehow. Kick them out of the building. Say, I'm not going to have this fighting all night long on Raw. I'm the new general manager. I'm not having it. You guys are out. If you try to get back in, security will have you arrested, because then you will be breaking and entering or trespassing. That I get, Mike. But to just have them flat out arrested for doing what? What did they do? They came down to confront an opponent?
They didn't even do that to, was it Nikki Bella or Brie Bella when they had her issued out of the building, and then she came back and had Stephanie arrested. I mean, they didn't even do that then. So, I mean, like you said, it doesn't make any sense. And frankly, you know, you mentioned a Wyatt family reunion. There's rumors now that they're going to flip Bray Wyatt. Now, if they're going to flip Bray Wyatt and they have a Wyatt family reunion, it doesn't make sense for them to then flip Strowman back.
That's not going to happen. Todd, look, the opening was exciting and all, but it's based on a false premise. It's based on the premise that Braun Strowman did something wrong and is afraid of the Shield, I guess, so he needs his buddies for backup. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Oh, you're absolutely right. The way they book it was weird, and like you said, I would have it done with you the way you said it. Have him be escorted out of the building, get thrown out of the building. You come back, you be arrested for trespassing or breaking the entry again, but arrested right there to start.
Yeah, I mean that would be better, because at least then Corbin would get the heat, and you'd say, well, okay, Corbin booted them out, but he didn't boot out Strowman and Ziggler and McIntyre. But okay, it sets the tone for the show. It's not horrible, it's just illogical. Finn Balor then goes to Baron Corbin and says he wants his rematch. Wants a rematch. Baron Corbin says, okay, fine, you're going to get it in the main event. And you can actually hear an audible groan from the crowd. You can hear a groan from the crowd when it's announced that's going to be the main event, because they don't want that to be the main event, because we've seen it 800 times. Turns out it's not the main event anyway, but you hear the audible groan from the crowd, which is never good. We then get the return of the Bella Twins. And I believe it was Nikki who almost killed herself, face planting herself with a flying leap. And let's face it, folks. If you want some hard truth, here it is. I don't care who Brie is married to, and I don't care who Nikki may or may not be dating or seeing or whatever. Unfortunately, the Bella Twins are a throwback to women's wrestling before this revolution. They can try to claim to be a part of it all they want. They can say we're this and we're that and we train hard. I didn't see it. Having the Bella Twins back felt to me like we're taking a step backwards and not a step forwards. And while, you know, look, they're reality stars, they're doing what they do, that's fine. But to have them come in totally green after, you know, I don't know how long. What they say, 3 years or however long it's been. And beat the Riot Squad. Is just, it's mind-boggling. Yeah, I know they're the big names. I get it. They have a reality TV show. I get that. Could you have had the Bellas fight somebody, you know, unimportant? A couple of local talent, something? Does it have to be girls you're trying to promote? Well, it does, because then we find out, of course, that the Bellas are going to team up with Ronda Rousey in Australia to fight the Riot Squad. And in the absolutely most boneheaded segment, and I know I'm jumping ahead, but I have to mention it now while I'm mentioning the Bellas, in the absolute most boneheaded segment I have ever seen, I think, on Raw, the Bellas actually go to Ronda Rousey and say, hey, if you need any advice, if you need any coaching, if you need some training, oh, you're going to train Ronda Rousey. My head exploded. Yeah, that's what she needs. She needs coaching from the Bellas. I'm doing what? Snaring a husband that's a top superstar? I mean, what the hell? What the hell kind of logic is that? I don't know, Mike. You know, I understand the Bellas are loved and all, but I'm not that thrilled to see him back.
I'm not, and especially the fact that you know what's going to happen on SmackDown, right? You know what they're angling for on SmackDown with Daniel Bryan and Bree, you know? It's going to be Daniel Bryan and Brie versus, you know, The Miz and Maurice. You know that's going to happen, right? So I kind of get they had to put Brie in the ring, you know, to get her ready for that match. I know they're going to put, you know, I know they're going to put these two girls together in a tag team. They need to find tag teams, and basically the Bellas are a tag team, can be a tag team again. And so they need to have tag teams. So I get that, and I get what they're trying to angling for with they're going to use Brie more than going to use Nikki, though. So I get that, but you're absolutely right. You know,
it's just weird. It's weird on all accounts. I don't know. I wasn't. It's not like I'm not happy to see them back. I just wish we could have told a better story other than, oh, there's something big coming up, we better get our nose into it, because that's kind of what it is. All of a sudden, the Bellas are like, we never left and we're top dogs. They don't have to say, well, we're coming back, we got to kind of start fresh. No, you're right up there, you're main event. You know, it's just, I don't know. I just don't like it. I don't like it. Now, Derek is saying the Lashley thing was maybe worse than the Bella thing, but here's why it's not worse. Because the Bellas, coming back from 3 years of not wrestling, literally walk up to a woman who it was the UFC fighting champion and say to her, yeah, if you never need any training or advice, are you, what? Yeah, we're better than you. You know, we're the real deal, and you're the rookie kid. So, hey, rookie kid, if you need any advice from the real deal, you know where to find us. Oh, my God. I mean, you want to talk about the height of arrogance. I thought they were flipping him heel. I really did. Not that the Lashley segment wasn't horrible, because it was horrible for many reasons, and we'll get to that. But to have the Bellas literally say, you know, if the chips are down, kid, come to us and we'll coach you through. Oh, that's Which do you want it to be? Is Ronda Rousey the Terminator, or does she need help from the Bellas? God have mercy on us. I don't know where we're going with that. We then have a very interesting thing happen. Chad Gable and Bobby Lashley. Oh, not Bobby Lashley. Bobby Roode. I got Lashley on my mind. Bobby Roode. Form a tag team. Now, my initial reaction is good. Good, because God knows we need tag teams. And this is a good one. But then I'm thinking, how sad is this really? Bobby Roode was an NXT champion. And he just can't get over here. And I'm not sure what you need to do if you're Chad Gable. Chad Gable, every time he's in that ring, it's an awesome match. I know he's, you know, very, very small and probably belongs on 205 Live, although I think he's just over it. But man, he really, you know, for my money, he's better than Balor. But maybe the tag team thing is their niche. I don't know. Here's what I do wish they had done. I know they're in a hurry to do this, but I wish they'd have given us a story behind it. I wish they'd have given us a reason why Chad Gable went to Roode, or Roode went to Gable, or whatever. I just wish there was a story instead of it just being, oh yeah, I've been watching Roode and I think he'd be a great tag team partner, and that's all there is to it, Mike. It feels like we skipped a few chapters.
Yeah, it feels like either you skipped a few chapters, or they're not even trying. They're not even trying to write anything. Oh, we gotta just throw these two guys together and hope it works out. You know?
Yeah, that's what it felt like. It's exactly what it felt like. We could have got a story behind this. We could have got, you know, Chad Gable's in a match, maybe Bobby Roode comes down to help him, or Bobby Roode offers him some advice, or Chad Gable is there for... We could have got something out of this. Instead, Todd, we just get, no, this is the new thing, just accept it and move on.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, they jumped the shark with that. Like you said, it's... Why did they put this tag team together to put together... And then this whole, we're just going to throw you together as a tag team. No storyline, no nothing.
See, that's the problem with Raw. They tend to just say, we're hitting a reset button. And there's no rhyme or reason to why we're doing any of this. But this is what we're doing, and you're just going to have to live with it. So they go out and they beat the Ascension in a good match. Very good match. But we don't have any vested interest in Bobby Roode and Chad Gable now, and we should. If you gave us a reason why these two guys teamed, we could get behind them more than just two random guys decide one day we're going to be a tag team. So I think you just could have got more out of that than this. Then we get Elias, who I guess the WWE have decided is no longer a wrestler. He's just an entertainer. I don't remember the last time Elias has had a storyline feud, a big moment, anything else. He just comes out to sing, that's it, and gets interrupted. That's his lot in life now. You've almost ruined Elias. If you don't do something with him soon, this is going to get old, and people are going to move on, and you'll have lost your chance for a major, major face. Anyway, he does a good job of riling up the crowd, saying Columbus would have turned the boat around if he knew, you know, his name was going to be mentioned in a city in Ohio. Alexa Bliss comes out to presumably take umbrage and say, I was born here. Leads the crowd in an Ohio State chant and then says, you know, this was the worst thing I could have done is to grow up in this city. I hated it. And goes full out heel mode on that. Obviously, she's flanked with her buddies, Alicia Fox and Mickey James. But we get Ronda Rousey and, of course, Natty. Natty ends up tapping because suddenly, here's what we're told. This is the thing that bothers me the most. Well, Alexa Bliss has been studying jiu-jitsu. For what, 2 weeks? 2 weeks and she tapped out Natty? This is the lazy way of saying we had Ronda Rousey destroy Alexa Bliss to the point where Alexa Bliss doesn't even matter anymore. So who wants to see the rematch? No one, because she killed her. It's like seeing James Ellsworth and Braun Strowman all over again. There's no point. So what do we do with Alexa now? Let's say she's been studying jiu-jitsu. Well, that's nice. Boy, she's a fast learner. I don't know what to tell you about it. Again, they've just overbooked Ronda Rousey to the point where there's no good matches, and now they have to try to compensate by, you know, the next thing they're going to say is, well, Alexa Bliss keeps in her ring an underdog super energy pill, and when she takes that, she becomes the strength of six Alexa Blisses plus two. I mean, this is how silly it's getting, Mike.
It really is, and that's the thing. I mean, this just about ruined Alexa Bliss, but, you know, that's the deal. And look, he's still, it doesn't matter what, we've said it before, it doesn't matter what he does. He's going to get cheered, Elias. It doesn't matter. You know, now, they got to put him in the ring, they got to put him in the ring with somebody, but it doesn't matter what he does, he's going to get cheered. I mean, he can say all the bad things about whatever X town, whatever town he's in that he wants, he's going to get cheered. And they got to know this. They got to see this, you know. And I don't know what's
They don't know
going
what to do
on.
With him, Mike. That's the thing. They don't know what to do with him. That's why they're doing nothing with him, because they're sitting there saying, what do we do with this guy? What do we do with him? How do we book this guy when it should be fairly obvious? Should be fairly obvious. But I guess they don't get it. So, you know, if you don't get it, you don't get it. Now, Drew McIntyre and Dolph Ziggler go to Baron Corbin. They say, well, they want a title shot. And Corbin says, normally I could make that happen, but the revival's already been booked and advertised. There's nothing I can do about it. Ziggler and McIntyre say, what happens if they can't make it? Corbin says, well, then that could be a different story. And right away, we know what's going to happen. Sure enough, they attack the revival. And it is Dolph Ziggler and Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre, thanks to Baron Corbin, filling in for the revival. They get a tag team championship shot against the B team. Probably the best match the B team has done. This is something you should have done a long time ago with the B team, is to make them look competent and not lucky, because last night they looked competent and not lucky. Unfortunately, it was in a losing effort, which in all seriousness, it pretty much had to be. But here's where we're having a problem, WWE. Let's just think about this for a minute. You have two factions locked in a what I presume is going to be a long-term fight. And those two factions are the Shield and Dolph Ziggler's, whatever they're going to call that. Seth Rollins is a champion, an intercontinental champion. Roman Reigns is the champion, universal champion. And now Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre are tag team champions. So now you have all your champions and all your major feuds revolving around six guys. Think about that for a minute. None of these guys being champion could have still made a really, really, really good feud. But now you've got your all your titles hung around them, all of them. So this is what it's going to revolve around. You're not going to see Seth Rollins open challenges, because Ziggler and his crew is always going to come down. You're not going to see, yes, you're going to see title defenses from Roman Reigns, but it's going to be against Braun Strowman and Drew McIntyre. This is what we're in for. The Shield is going to try to go for the tag team belt. We see this. The writing is on the wall now. You put all your eggs in six baskets. The Shield, Dolph Ziggler, Drew McIntyre, and Braun Strowman. That's it. And that's a problem, Mike, going forward, I think.
That's a problem going forward. And look, I mean, we've talked about this before. You know, we've got on this show, we've got these six guys with their eggs on in one basket, and these six guys' baskets where on the show we will talk about on Friday. We got a bunch of people with eggs and a bunch of people's baskets because they're not booking it the same way because that wouldn't be smart, you know. That I mean, you look at it. You look at it. You look at how things are set up on both shows, and is it any wonder why SmackDown's the better show?
Yeah, I mean, how do you want Seth Rollins to start a feud with whoever for the Intercontinental belt when he's tied into this feud with these guys? How do you want the tag team champions to start a feud with, I don't know, the Authors of Pain or whoever when, no, they're tied into a feud with the Shield? It's all tied up now. You've knotted everything around six guys. And that's a mistake. Because what's ending up happening is you're minimizing the belts. You're minimizing all the belts. It was bad enough that Roman Reigns is going to be part of this pack as the champion. But now all the champions are there. And it's just, I don't think it's a good idea. I just don't. Anyway, we then get the surprise of the night as the Authors of Pain have a brand new manager, Drake Maverick, Rockstar Spud, which is fantastic on its face because he's a great talker. He's small, so he makes those guys look enormous, even though they're not as big as you think they are. They're not small, but they're not giants. But next to Drake Maverick, they are. Here's my problem with it, though. While Drake Maverick should have been with him from the very beginning, or if Paul Ellering couldn't be, this would have been fantastic. Again, they hit the reset button and said, oh, well, now that Drake Maverick's here, no more stupid feuds. We're just going to demolish people like they should have done to begin with. This is what they should have done to begin with. But you got a problem because this is your 205 Live general manager. So how are you going to justify, I presume they're still heels. So how are you going to justify that he is managing a heel faction and he's over on 205 Live as pretty much a neutral or a face, really? It's very odd, and I don't know how they're going to do this unless they're going to take that away from Maverick, which they might. I don't know where this is going. I do know that the Authors of Pain I saw this week with Drake Maverick is the Authors of Pain I wanted to see from the very beginning, Todd, and it looks like they just hit the reset button.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. They pushed the reset button. They should have Drake Maverick, Rockstar Spud, I'm used to call him that. He should have been the manager from the get-go when they first came up on the main roster, but now they got him up.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. Will it help? I guess it is helping. It's already helped, but I don't know how that's going to work with 205 Live. Now, I call that the surprise of the night. Derek saying, what about The Undertaker? That was no surprise. Everybody knew The Undertaker was going to be there. So that wasn't, you know. They're all saying, what a big, huge surprise. It wasn't a surprise. I guess some people were surprised, but I thought most people knew it. So, but let's get to that segment. Because they devoted a lot of time to promoting a match that, A, is between two 50-plus-year-old men, and two, a month and a half down the road, instead of their pay-per-view coming right up. Shawn Michaels gets in the ring, does a little self-promotion, and then says, well, look, you know, a lot of people are saying The Undertaker's going to win this, but I know Triple H. He's been my best friend for years, and he's got a lot more left in the tank, and that's why I'm going to go with Triple H, which brings The Undertaker out. And The Undertaker basically says, look, every single time I've been in the ring with either one of you, I put you down. This is not going to be any different. And the only reason you won't come out of retirement is because you're afraid. It's not out of respect. I don't even understand why Shawn Michaels said, out of respect to you, I didn't come out of retirement. What? What do you mean? I don't even understand what he meant by that. And then The Undertaker says, well, is it respect or is it fear? And what I'm smelling is Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker at WrestleMania. But the WWE probably is just teasing that. Just to make us anticipate something they have no intention of giving us. But the logical story behind that would, of course, be The Undertaker does indeed get by Triple H in Australia, and Shawn Michaels comes out of retirement prior to WrestleMania for one more match with The Undertaker. That would be the good payoff. But it's probably just to sell this Australian event. And here's the thing. What's the good outcome? If, let's take Shawn Michaels off the table. Let's say Shawn's not going to do another match. Then what's the good outcome? Triple H wins and The Undertaker does what? Or The Undertaker wins and, okay, big deal. That's where we have the problem. So if you're going to promote this to me and say, well, this is the long-term plan, that he's aggravating Shawn Michaels and then Shawn's going to come out of retirement at WrestleMania or another event or whatever, fine. That sounds good to me. But if this is just a one-off, then you're putting a lot of effort into... Notice how much effort they put into selling their matches. But you don't put that much effort into selling anybody else's. See, that's kind of what bothers me. Oh, Triple H is involved. We're getting plenty of TV time. Undertaker's showing up. Shawn Michaels is showing up. We're getting everybody in the whole damn federation to pick a winner. We're going to build this and build this and build this and build this and build this. Because it's us. But if it's some other schlub, no, they don't need no build-up. Why give them any build-up? Let them just go out there and fight. If they can't get over, they can't get over. Oh, I get it. So if it's you guys, you got plenty of time, plenty of TV time to give to build this matchup. But if it's some of the newer guys who could really use this build-up, we have no time for you. None at all. Derek saying he wasn't advertised last night. Yeah, he wasn't advertised, but everybody knew he flew into Ohio. He had Instagram pictures and everything in Ohio. So, you know, if you follow that, it wasn't much of a surprise. Plus, you know, if you really thought that Shawn Michaels was just going to come out and say, I picked Triple H, good night, everybody, what would be the point of that? You knew somebody had to confront Shawn Michaels. What would be the point of Shawn Michaels just getting in the ring and saying, everybody's been asked their opinion on videotape, but I flew out here live to get in the ring and give you my opinion, and my opinion is Triple H. Good night. That doesn't make any sense. So, of course, The Undertaker was going to be there to confront him. It's not that I didn't like the segment. I did like the segment, Mike. My thought pattern was, oh, gee, they find plenty of time, months ahead of time, to promote their matches, but they won't promote somebody else's match even 2 weeks ahead of time.
Yeah, and that gets me as well. And, you know, the thing is why are you promoting, why are you teasing something that you're probably not going to give us? You know, I mean, why? And back to the Drake Maverick thing, we know that Ray Jr. is back with the company, correct?
Right, so yeah,
maybe he's going to be the replacement on 205 Live as the general manager.
Well, one thing I can tell you for sure is I would love to see Drake Maverick on Raw or SmackDown regular as a manager, because I know his mic work is great. I know he knows how to aggravate a crowd. I know he knows how to push his people, and we need people like that. We really do. So I'm hoping that that's the case, really, because I think he's wasted on 205 Live, quite frankly. What do you think of the Undertaker Shawn Michaels segment, Todd? I thought it was good. It's just, why promote a match so far ahead of time when you're not doing that to anybody else?
It was pretty cool to see the Undertaker, but I was not surprised. But it was pretty cool to see him. But and I thought it was a cool segment there. There was like a little stare down between the two, and like you said, it was pretty cool.
I hope it comes to something, because if it does, then at least I can say the WWE had the foresight. Because when The Undertaker left that ring, I was not more interested in seeing Triple H versus The Undertaker. I was more interested in seeing Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker. So I hope the WWE realizes that. You've given us that bone. You've thrown us in that direction. That Shawn Michaels is asking himself, was it out of respect or is it out of fear? Maybe I should take that chance. This is a golden opportunity. If Shawn's ever going to come out of retirement and do one more match, this would be it. And fans would eat it up. Whether it's a good, bad, or indifferent match, fans would eat it up. So let's hope that's where they're going with this. So Sasha and Bayley come out to take on Dana Brooke and Ember Moon, who's been teaming with Sasha and Bayley, so they have nothing for Ember Moon. I feel very badly for Ember Moon, because she's a very, very talented worker, and they don't have anything for her. She hasn't been in one feud. Not one. I mean, they've introduced her, and then it's just like, okay, she's here, and you'll see her now and then, but there's nothing major on the horizon for her. We're not putting her against anyone. There's going to be no big rivalry, no pay-per-view match. I don't get it. And the gimmick to this match, of course, is that Dana Brooke gets pinned and apparently quits Titus Worldwide. I don't know whether that's to go full-time wrestling, for the women's division. I don't know whether that's going to involve an angle with Apollo Crews. I don't know where this whole thing is going, Mike, but looks like they broke the band up before they really got a good, start on things.
Yeah, it looks that way to me as well. And look, we've said this about Ember Moon. That gimmick, her entrance would have fit very much nicely, very nicely with the old Wyatt family. It would have fit very nicely. That's that voodoo mama, big bad voodoo mama, voodoo queen entrance, I mean, she's got the mannerisms and she's got the entrance down correctly, perfectly in my mind. That's what they should be doing with her, and they're just simply not.
Well, she's a good worker, but they want to promote Ronda Rousey and her three moves. So Ember's got to take the back seat. It's just the way it is in the WWE these days, I guess. Let's get to Bobby Lashley's segment, because this aggravates me for a couple of reasons. Bobby Lashley comes out of Baron Corbin's office where he was giving a performance review, I guess, by Baron Corbin, who said that he needs anger management or he needs something, so he's going to have a meditation session with Jinder Mahal, who's been reduced from being the champion to a comedy act. Boy, that went quick, didn't it? As soon as you didn't need him to break India anymore, goodbye, Jinder. And that's bad enough, because Lashley is truly just horrible at what he does. I'm sorry, that's the way it is. He cannot do these skits. He's an okay wrestler. I don't think he's a great wrestler. He's an okay wrestler. But, man, he can't do these skits. He just looks like the biggest dumbass in the world doing this stuff. And there he is sitting there. And who should attack him? Kevin Owen. My stomach just dropped for three reasons. One, he quit last week. You didn't even give him a week off. He quits on Monday, shows up on Monday. He wouldn't have been showing up any other time anyway, so he got no days off. So there goes that storyline down the crapper. Two, if he's starting a feud with Bobby Lashley, guess who's winning? So there goes Kevin Owens is getting a big push after this down the drain. And three, there goes the Kevin Owens is going to be a Paul Heyman guy down the drain. So Kevin Owens is basically going to have a feud with Bobby Lashley in which Bobby Lashley is going to kill him. And I don't know what's going to happen to Kevin Owens. But I know you could have played this storyline out very well. In the back of my mind, I was saying when Kevin Owens comes back, he is somehow going to cost Braun Strowman that title at Hell in a Cell for everything Braun Strowman has done to him. Somehow that's going to happen. That's exactly what I thought. No, he shows up and attacks Bobby Lashley. But that's not bad enough. Because later, he shows up to help Braun Strowman. Help him. It's unbelievable. It really is. I mean, that's just poor. You want to talk about poor storytelling. So let's all encompass this. Kevin Owens shows up, beats the hell out of Bobby Lashley. We know where that feud's going. Nowhere. And then Baron Corbin says, well, with everything that went on tonight, I can't have a match. So you'll have an opponent, and that opponent happens to be Braun Strowman. Braun Strowman basically sells a lot. You know, he sold quite a bit to Finn Balor, but at the end he squashes him, and then here comes the three bad guys who are going to end his career. I could have done without the maniacal laughing like, you know, they were tying him to the railroad tracks, but okay. And who should come back out but the Shield? But here's the thing that bothered me. Instead of them just coming back out badass and mad as they could be, they come out in a police van. So as fans, we're expected to believe that the same police that hauled them away and charged them and allowed them to post bond said to them, here's the keys to the police van, you guys. Go ahead. Get back to the show. No problem. I mean, that's just stupid on all levels. And that's called jumping the shark. That's called you went way too far. They did not need to come in there in a police van. Because that makes the whole story look fake and false and ridiculous. Try getting arrested sometime, and then when you get bailed out, ask, can I borrow the police car? See what happens. But that's not even bad enough, because as they go to help poor Finn Balor, the whole dressing room basically jumps on them. I don't know if you realize it, but they tried to throw Seth Rollins into the windshield of that thing, and it shattered, and he got cut bad so they wouldn't show him until they wiped some of it off his face or whatever it happened to be. He had superficial cuts, I guess. But leading the pack is Kevin Owens. And I'm saying to myself, why in the hell is Kevin Owens helping Braun Strowman? The very man who caused him to quit. And I just can't figure out, Mike, how that storyline makes any sense at all.
Right. You know, I got the fact that the first time they bring everybody out because they're trying to separate them and they don't think they can separate them with just what they're going to have, you know, with just anybody. So they bring the whole locker room out. I get that. Now, why would the good guys, you know, why would the faces side with Braun Strowman and attack, I'm not talking about Kevin Owens, who's if he's a face or not. I'm talking about Titus and those guys and, you know, those guys. Why would they help in the attack against the Shield? You know, why?
I don't know what the hell's going on there. But the one that got me the worst was Kevin Owens, because if anyone should be against Braun Strowman, that man should be Kevin Owens. And that's why I thought that the WWE was going to have Kevin Owens disappear until Hell in a Cell. And then somehow, some way, he was going to cost Braun Strowman the title. I really thought that's where they were going with this, which would have been a good story and a good revenge for Kevin Owens. But instead, somehow he's aligned himself. I don't even understand the story, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. When the locker room, I think, I see nothing but heel superstars came out of that locker room, and all the no faces or anything.
Yeah, I don't know if any faces came out. I don't think too many faces came out, or people who were real faces. But it doesn't matter. Why did the whole locker room, even if it's all heels, why did they come out and attack the Shield? Doesn't make a lot of sense. They're all on his side now. Nobody wants to be the tag team champions. Nobody wants. What's going on? And why does Braun Strowman suddenly need so much help? So I think that's a real fail at the end. It was a good beatdown. And the fact that Seth Rollins legitimately got busted open kind of added to the oh shit moment. So there were some fun spots on Raw last night. There really were. There were some fun spots. But the stories are starting to get really convoluted where you're like, I don't know if I can follow this. Kevin Owens is no longer mad at Braun Strowman. Why? Braun Strowman aligned himself with two guys he wouldn't piss on if they were on fire 2 weeks ago. Why? Chad Gable grabs a hold of Bobby Roode's hand as a tag team partner. Why? Dana Brooke suddenly walks away from Titus Worldwide because she didn't win a match. Why? When that wasn't even her job. Drake Maverick is the manager of the Authors of Pain. Why? See, we never get the why. We never get that part of the story. We never get the Authors of Pain. You know, we're going to see 3 weeks of the Authors of Pain saying we're in search of a manager. And we're going to go through the cream of the crop. And then we're going to, you know, we never get that. We never get Dana Brooke having these moments, you know, where she says, I legitimately want to be in the women's division. And I, you know, being a statistician is fine, but I want you guys to support me too. And then going through that whole thing and getting frustrated. We never get that. They cut us off at the knees with the story and just say, chapter one, chapter eight. Everything in the middle doesn't matter. Forget it. Fill in your own blanks. That's kind of what the writers do. You fill in the blanks. You fill in why Braun Strowman needs the help of these other guys. You fill in why Kevin Owens is suddenly on Braun Strowman's side. You fill in why Dana Brooke is doing this suddenly. You fill in why Ember Moon is teaming with Dana Brooke. You fill in why the Bellas are suddenly back and they can beat the top teams when they haven't been around. That's the problem. You fill in why Elias isn't wrestling anyone ever. No, we need you to fill it in. That's the whole point. This isn't one of those create your own story things. We want the plot lines. We want the whys. We want the buildups. You could have made Chad Gable and Bobby Roode a great team if you built it up right, where you say, oh, this might be coming, and then there it is. No, instead you just jump to it. So you're giving us the payoffs, but you're not giving us the buildups to the payoffs. So all we're getting is the payoffs. And I don't like it. It's frustrating. So I don't know, Mike, having said that, there were some good spots on Raw. It's just that I feel like the stories are always jumping ahead. I always feel like I missed 3 episodes. And for that reason, I can't give it a really high grade. In the beginning, probably halfway through the show, I'm like, this could be a B-. But now it's looking more like a C-. What's your thoughts?
I think it's a C- as well. And look, this is worse than what you're talking about. This is almost like they're writing a Mad Libs type of wrestling. You know,
yeah.
We all remember what Mad Libs was. You got to complete a sentence by using a word or a phrase. That's what they're doing. They're allowing us to do their – they're wanting us to do their job for them. They're supposed to be the ones that are completing the sentences. It's not even them writing a whole chapter. They're not even doing that. They're not even completing full sentences now, you know?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. It feels like you've always missed a few episodes. And I think to myself, you could have gotten 4 months out of the buildup before Dana Brooke storms away from Titus Worldwide. You could have got 3 months out of a buildup to, is Bobby Roode and Chad Gable going to be a tag team? Maybe they could have been enemies first. Maybe they could have fought each other several times and mutual respect. You could have got so much out of why Kevin Owens has decided, you know what, I can't beat Braun Strowman, so I'm going to join him because that's just the way I am. I'm a coward. And I'll do his bidding if that's what he wants me to do. You could have done better, and you could have flipped Kevin Owens and said, look, Braun Strowman now deserves to be ripped off of this title, and look, no better man to do it than Kevin Owens, who he put through hell. There are many stories you could tell, and you choose to just say, no, we're hitting the reset button all the time. I feel like next week I could tune in and Titus Worldwide could be managed by Asuka. I don't know. You know, it doesn't matter, it seems. It's just like random, whatever. We don't need an excuse. No excuses needed. And then they throw out this weird thing with Alexa Bliss, who's kind of like flirting with Elias, and I don't know where that's going, if anywhere. So I got to give it a C-. There were parts of it that I thought were, a B-plus even. I loved the B-teams match. I thought that was their best match in a long, long time. And there were other parts that I really enjoyed, Todd, but this convoluted keep changing the story thing is bothering me.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. It keeps bothering me, too. They keep changing everything, but I'm going to give it my grade, too. I'm going to go with you guys. I'm going to give it a C-, too, and it would have been a better grade, but it just didn't seem right there. I'm going to go with a C-.
Yeah, and now that you've put all your eggs in the basket of all your champions are involved in a blood feud with two factions, you have two factions controlling all the championships, except the women's. It feels like we're in for a long few months where they're just going to fight each other repetitively on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And everybody else is going to get lost in the shuffle. Doesn't matter what Kevin Owens is doing. Doesn't matter what Titus Worldwide is doing. It's not going to matter what the Authors of Pain are doing. It's not going to matter what the B team or Bray Wyatt or anybody else is doing. It's only going to matter what those six guys are doing. That's what it feels like to me. And I wish that wasn't the case. You could have easily had this feud and not and kept give the belt to someone else then. You give the belt to Roman Reigns and then you want to make it, you know, basically a faction thing. Well, then don't have Seth Rollins be the champion. Let someone else be the champion so we can have that feud, plus we can have a feud for the Intercontinental belt, plus we can have tag team feuds outside of this war. But no, it's all in the same thing now. All the tag team feuds are going to be within these six guys. All the intercontinental feuds are going to be within these six guys. All the heavyweight championship feuds are going to be within these guys. You made it a federation of six, and everybody else is incidental. And unfortunately, your women's champion is not going to put on a good match, so we've got a problem. My hope is that they come to their senses, and I can't see them letting Ziggler and McIntyre drop the tag team belts right away to someone else, because that makes them look weak in their feud with the Shield. They can't let Seth drop the belt. That makes him look weak in his feud with the Shield, with his feud with McIntyre's crew. So I don't know. But you see what I'm saying, Mike, is that you could have had Roman Reigns as the champion and then nobody else in that feud champions. It's just a blood feud between those three guys and the other three guys with Roman Reigns, the champion, caught up in the mix. In the meantime, you could have other people in blood feuds for the Intercontinental belt and other people in major feuds for the tag team belt. And you could have featured more people feuding than just putting it all in six guys.
Right. And frankly, they could still do that whole, Kevin Owens costs him his championship because, you know, that they, he still hadn't gotten his shot at the championship yet, and Kevin Owens is still there, and obviously they want him to be a heel. They want him to be a heel along with that crew, so they could absolutely, and yeah, it would make that crew look a little bit weak, but really, Braun Strowman doesn't need a championship, I don't think, you know. And look, I mean, as much as I love Ziggler in that tag team, I tell you what, you put Strowman and Galloway in a tag team together. I mean, you look at Strowman and Galloway together, they almost look like they're the same size, you know.
Yeah, they sure do. Look, all I'm saying is if Raw were to really try hard, you could have had the Shield against Braun Strowman and Ziggler and McIntyre with Roman the champion. That's fine. You could have had maybe the Authors of Pain running down the B team with their new manager. You could have had a different Intercontinental champion. I don't care who it is. Kevin Owens, Bobby Lashley, Finn Balor, it doesn't matter. You could have had him going against other people. You could have had interest. The spotlight could have been on several different people, as opposed to the spotlight is now firmly on six people. They're the only ones that really matter on Raw right now, other than Ronda Rousey. And that's just ridiculous. I don't see that as being smart booking. If I'm a booker, I want the spotlight on as many people as I can. So if I've already got the fans interested in this feud, they don't need the championships. Let's give the championships to other guys. As much as I'm not a Finn Balor fan, if Finn Balor's going to be the Intercontinental Champion and he's going to feud with any number of people, I'm much more interested in that than to watch Seth Rollins again and again and again and again take on the same three people, that's what's going to happen now. Or if he doesn't take on those same three people, those three people are going to come down and interfere. It's always going to be about that feud for the next month and a half, 2 months, where the spotlight could have been on a lot more people and you could have got a lot more out of this. So Raw wasn't really horrible. The problem is not its wrestling or its roster or anything else. The problem is we always feel like we missed a few episodes and we're caught in the middle of, why is this person doing this? Oh, I don't know. When did this person become friends with this person? I don't know. That's always what I feel like with Raw. And now that you've got only six people that really matter, it feels like it's going to get stale. It really does. It feels like it's going to get stale. I hope I'm wrong. I enjoyed Raw last night more than I did the past 2 weeks, put it that way. Because at least I see they're trying to shake things up, but they're trying to shake things up immediately. It's like somebody hit the panic button and said, forget it. Everything we did isn't working. Change everything. Braun's a heel. Dana Brooke walks out. These guys are a tag team. New manager for the Authors of Pain. New tag team champions. We gotta shake this up. That's what it felt like. Felt like an instant panic button hit. So we'll see what ends up happening. Tonight should be a very interesting night on SmackDown. And, of course, we'll be here on Friday to talk a little bit more about it. But at this stage of the game, SmackDown has been the better show consistently week after week after week after week. And it's not going to take much, folks, to beat it again because their stories have remained consistent. Their stories have played out over the course of a long period of time. The Rusev Day thing is playing out. The Daniel Bryan Miz thing is playing out. Everything is playing out over the course of whatever. And while I do have some problems with some of the stories over on SmackDown, at least they're playing them out so we can feel like we're catching up with it. I don't feel like I missed three chapters when I watch SmackDown. I feel like, oh yeah, that's what happened last week and they're continuing it. So let's see if they do it again. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll see you Friday with more Wrestle Chat Radio. You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.